From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour has been made quietly, behind closed doors over the past several months. In public, the debate about a state takeover of the Rochester City School Board has played out, often with vitriol. Mayor Lovely Warren has accused the city school board of actively trying to keep children in poverty just so they can keep their jobs and their paychecks. The school board has pushed back, saying that everyone is doing their best to help kids in one of the most impoverished districts in the country. But quietly, there have been the kinds of conversations and efforts that don't always get a lot of attention in media. There have been serious talks about what schools need and how we can help. And when I say we, sometimes we're talking about teachers, sometimes it's parents, sometimes it's people who don't even live in the city of Rochester. If fixing poverty is part of the formula, it's clear that poverty isn't going away tomorrow, next month, next year. So what can be done now? Well, one of the people offering ideas and possible solutions is the 2018 New York State Teacher of the Year. Christopher Albrecht doesn't teach in Rochester, but in his view, we should all care deeply about the health and the future of the city school district. So he's offering his ideas on what might help. And this hour, we're glad he's willing to sit down with us and for the first time talk publicly about some of his ideas and what he's been working on privately in Rochester. He's a fourth grade teacher at the Fred W. Hill School in Brockport, the 2018 New York State Teacher of the Year. And we always enjoy the conversation. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me on again, Evan.
I don't want to speak for you, but is it fair to say what I said in the intro, that wherever you live, whatever your station, we all ought to care about Rochester and the city school district?
My gosh, yes. Even though I'm a Brockport teacher, I want to see everybody succeed. And I would almost relate it to, if you want to put it on maybe a smaller level, if I was a baseball coach and my team's succeeding and the lacrosse team's not succeeding, I should still, it's not us versus them, it's us all together. So anytime that we look at Rochester and we, you know, I hear, let's just call a spade, the negative news that's coming out of Rochester City Schools, or at least what's the perceived negative news, that it does hurt as a teacher out in Brockport still. I do feel a level of worry and concern. And even though it's not my particular town that I live in or teach in, it is my town. I want to see everybody, every child succeed, every school feel good about it, because school is supposed to be a place where it's supposed to be a place of joy, but also a place where success happens. And right now in the media, I don't know if we're quite going that way. And that's why I'm here on the show right now, to bring hopefully a positive spin, give a couple ideas out there. Over the past, couple years now, but specifically more in the past half year, I volunteered my time very under the radar at three different schools in Rochester, working with staff, especially with staff and administration, to help them clarify some of the ways that we can do things better. I know that Mrs. Elia recommended that a distinguished educator come in. There were recommendations made, and that help was there. But the people that know Rochester the best are the people that live right here in Rochester. And what I've discovered is, with the three schools that I'm with, that each school is quite different than the other one. And the challenges, you can't generalize the challenges in one school. They're all elementary schools that I'm working with. You can't generalize between one school and the next school. Their challenges are different. One school, communication is a very, very big issue. Another school, literacy is a very big issue, and resources. So we need to come up with a system where maybe not one size fits all, but we really have to rely on the people that are closest to our children and make good decisions.
So as we go throughout this conversation, mm-hmm. with Christopher Albrecht, I mean, there's going to be questions that you can and really can't get into too much. I know you have a very committed goal of being constructive during a time where everything feels pulled apart. Mm-hmm. And so I have no problem, and I know our listeners will understand, if there's certain areas you can't go. And I'm not going to try to goad you into politics. I mean, I know everything becomes political. Mm-hmm. I do want to ask you, in your observations so far, if you're worried about the way some of this hits kids, mm-hmm. when they see the adult leadership fighting publicly. I do not doubt Mayor Warren's passion about this. I don't mm-hmm. doubt that. And I regret the fact that she won't come on this program anymore, because I would love to talk to her about it. when she directs a video to the children of Rochester and tells them that the leadership of the schools don't care about you and want to hold you down in a district where attendance is a problem, you know, there's truancy issues, graduation issues. My concern is, are the kids thinking, well, why am I going to school in the first place? If the mayor says nobody cares about me, the leadership, and I'm worried about them. And I'm not saying that kids shouldn't know about some of the debates happening in communities, some of the pain that everyone feels and the way that they're trying to make it better. But I do worry about, are you worried about them?
Well, I am. And, you know, you're right. I'm not going to give my views on Mrs. Warren as a political leader, because that's not what this is about. This is about schools. But she has crossed that line and talking about schools. And I agree with you. She does have a genuine concern about schools. She's brought it up enough times that obviously she's paying attention to that. I'd love to sit with her right now and talk constructively. And I am a constructive person. This is not the forum to go negative. And I was a little taken aback. That's why I'm here, is I was taken aback by that particular speech to children. I was taken aback by some of the comments that she made in the state of city of Rochester in that speech to the 2019 State of the City. So those things worry me. She used a word called fight. We need to fight for the rights of children and fight for our, you know, fight for what's right. I look at it more. I'd like to replace the word fight as maybe look for the opportunities that exist within our city. You are exactly right, Evan, at the beginning of when we started talking just now, that poverty is a very strong driving force right now. And I know it's been cited that Mayor Warren talks a lot about School 17. She's praised the J. Orchard Street Neighborhood Association and their progress that they've made in the Beacon of Hope. But and also cited that crime's down there, household income's up, poverty's down there. And that's true, that those areas, but the gains are not still enough. If you look at that neighborhood in general, still the percentages are not what I would call acceptable. They won't be acceptable until we're seeing those percentages at the point of those 80 to 90% percentages of people succeeding. So poverty does go hand in hand with it. What I would encourage the mayor to do right now is look at the root cause of a lot of the challenges that we face in Rochester City schools. And also, I would, you know, I would just start looking at other people that have influence to bring jobs to this area. Right now, we have an extremely high tax base in Monroe County, and therefore, we're not able to bring in the big businesses that I would hope to see. So we have an election term coming up this fall. If you're a voter out there, vote responsibly and ask yourself, you know, who's going to bring in those jobs right there? And I'm not talking about jobs. You know, we talk about joblessness being, okay, I'm working at $16 an hour at Starbucks. Well, you know what? It's not putting above the poverty level right there. That's bringing in an income, but not a sustainable income where you can sit down with your child each evening and work with them on their homework or, you know, talk to them about school or at least have an interest in school. You're still struggling at that point. So we really need to look on an economic standpoint, too, to develop that. Now, going back to Mayor Warren's thoughts, and you brought that up, I don't want to go the political direction on it because I would love to sit down with Mayor Warren and talk education with her because she does have that passion for that area. So I don't want to go the way of pointing fingers or anything like that, because that's not going to get us that way. But she referred to the children as unseen and forgotten. I will tell you this, the children of Rochester are not unseen and have not been forgotten. And what I've done is on my own, I've been working with staffs. I have not forgotten about those people, and I'm not the only one. There's other educators out there that are doing the same thing, trying to help the city. And I will add, the word greed has been used. I can tell you in all three of my circumstances, I have not received a single penny. I've gotten a free lunch each time I've come in, which is nice, and quite a few hugs and smiles from people that are in the educational field, including administrators, teachers, aides, and community members. But no, I'm doing this as a service, not for profit, 100%, no greed, doing it just because I care. And there are other people. I'm not going to name out names right now because I don't think that would be fair because I haven't talked to those people about it yet. But the there are a lot of people really trying on their own to help our neighbors in the city of Rochester and some people that live right in the city of Rochester improve for and do what's best by students.
Let's talk constructive ideas here. So I think one important point that you bring up is, you know, Rochester has dozens of schools, and in your experience already, you see you can't do a blanket approach. There's different problems in each school community. And so what can be done on the part of, I guess let's kind of take it station by station as you see it. Whether it's teachers, whether it's community members, parents, what do you want to start to see change?
Well, there's a couple schools. So let's go with a school. I'm going to go with one school, and let's do a little shout-out to a Rochester hero, Laurel Avery DeToy. Mrs. DeToy was the principal. She just retired this past year. She's the principal over at Roberto Clemente School. I believe that's school number 8. And she saw within 3 to 4 years about a 15% to 20% increase in the attendance of students. So number one, we've got to get our students to school, and I don't think anyone would argue that attendance rates, whether you're out in where I teach in Rockport or whether we're in the city, that has to happen right there. And that approach might be different for each school. In her school, there was a special program that they put in at the beginning of the day that attracted kids and made it a positive start to the day. And that worked in her particular model. It might be something different in other schools. I also see the schools that seem to be succeeding in Rochester are ones that have teachers and administrators invested in staying in the long term. And I think this is where maybe the term greed comes from. We need teachers right now. If we really expect to find consistency over years, and it takes years. This is not a little thing where you hit a button and all of a sudden it's fixed. This process is going to take time, just like curing the poverty issue. It takes time. But what I would like to see is this. I would like to see Rochester City Schools not be a stepping stone any longer for teachers to want to teach there for a few years and then go out to the burbs and in maybe a little less challenging situation and or administrators starting their career there. People need to make commitments and stay with those schools for a much longer time period. And by doing that, you get a flavor for the school district you're in or the school community that you're in and the community, the families, the parents. You get to know those people. As you get to know those people, it becomes success levels go up. So I would say retention of teachers. If I'm an administrator, I'm trying to retain every great teacher I have at my
school. How can you do it? How do you think that will happen?
Oh, that's a great question right there, the building relationships. We need to be very, very careful. One of the schools that I am working with, communication is a big, big deal in that school. And they had some challenges, whether it's with social media or the way people talk to each other. So going back to the base, it sounds very elementary, but going back to the basics of how we communicate with each other, how we listen to each other, and how we value each other, that there cannot be certain ways that we communicate that are inappropriate. We live in a world where there's so many ways to communicate with each other, whether it's through email or, you know, you can use social media to communicate something out and, you know, that's or just give a speech and put it out there on social media. And those things do not allow for dialogue. What they allow for is one-way communication. A lot of times we need to see each other's face and see each other's reactions and answer questions. So I would encourage administration to make a strong effort to keep those teachers there. And part of it is not about pay. I'd hesitate to ever turn away money. I mean, nobody would ever turn away, you know, crazy to turn away some money. But the way to do it is really by forming personal relationships, validating people. I know the best administrators I've ever worked for even knew stuff about my kids and my own personal life, my wife, outside of the school. And by feeling valued, you want to stay there and continue to work on those challenges, that whatever challenges are facing that school.
Not to denigrate, but just to sort of evaluate, if we have a high level of turnover in teaching, and we know that that happens in some schools in city districts like Rochester. Do you think that the idea of relationship building has not been prioritized?
Yes. Yep, I would agree. That we really do need to put more of a priority on the way we communicate with each other. It seems, and it's based on my own observations, that this is not an assumption. This is what I've witnessed, and we need to make sure that we are communicating in a way with the public. And it's, you know, Evan, think about this too. It's not just teacher to administrator or school leader. I think charter schools call them school leaders. We were also talking about the way we communicate with parents, the way we communicate, or if there are parents in the house. Last year I had 7 children that didn't even have a parent in their household, that they were being raised by a grandparent or by a trusted guardian. And so the way we communicate with those people, the way the students communicate with each other has to be taught. Students need to learn how to communicate, and then the way teachers communicate with their students. And there's so many. You think of all, it's almost like a spider web of communication when you draw all the lines between who in a school, whether it's the custodian or an administrative assistant or anybody in the school, they all have an impact, and they all have the ability to be constructive or destructive if we don't communicate correctly. So I would say the way we communicate, teacher attention, I think family communication is a huge piece. I would ask teachers, so we're going to own it from everybody. Administrators, all right, you know, how are you communicating with your staff? Okay, teachers, let's throw one at us. So I'm a teacher, I'm right with you, but have you contacted your homes early in the year? Have you contacted them before the school year starts so that first contact is not a negative contact if something doesn't go right early on in the school year? So the way that we're communicating with everybody is so important.
Opening with positive communication, relationship building from teacher to parent, not only administrator, principals, et cetera.
You know, teachers. Evan, I don't know if I'd even throw the word positive in there. What I would throw in is open, transparent communication. Because at the beginning of the year, like I called my houses. I've been all week long. I've been doing about 4 or 5 houses a night, just calling and introducing myself and, you know, asking any questions.
Do people answer the phone anymore?
You know what I'm getting is voicemail full.
I think it's a different world.
People need to empty their voicemail. but I would say about 60% of my households going the first round through, I've gone through.
And again, Christopher's talking about the parents of his students at the Fred W. Hill School
at Brockport,
the fourth grade parents.
Yeah, but a lot of them do have questions or want me to know something that I might not see on a piece of paper right there, but by getting that out right there and knowing that they have a little ownership in what's going to be taught in our classroom this year, and that I'm aware of their concerns. I was talked to one parent that talked about how their daughter has a dominant ear, that there's one side, there's an audiologist involved. I didn't see anything paperwork-wise, so what did I do? I simply moved her seat. But for that parent, when they come into that classroom and see that that's been taken care of, that's huge to that parent right there. And that little act right there might win that parent over and that family over to be positive towards the educational experience.
So when it comes to communication and the relationship building, I want to just kind of fix on that point just for a moment, because there is an assumption that I hear often, which is, well, you got to pay the teachers more. You got to pay the teachers more. And by the way, I think we have to pay the teachers more. That's my personal view in Rochester and everywhere. But if it's not just about pay, if it is about relationship building and you think that's going to make a difference, what you seem to be advocating for is a certain style of management or administration or leadership. And, you know, you hear often, well, there's all these different styles and there's a lot of different ways that it works. I, in a past work life, worked for a company where, you know, morale was kind of down. And the person who was in charge, I won't reveal a title or name, so as not to speak ill of the dead, it brought everybody in, and everybody kind of thought this was going to be one of those, hey, I see heads dragging, or, you know, that you're the morale's down and we're going to rally the troops. And what he said was, there's lots of people who want jobs who don't have them. Huh. And you're working here. Mm. And if you don't like it, there's the door. Let me know when you're leaving. And he walked out. That was it. I can tell you that did not rally the morale, but it set down a marker that said management doesn't really give a damn if you're feeling good about work or whatever, that your morale needs to come from you because you've got a job. And I said, okay, well, it's going to have to come from me. Not going to get positive reinforcement or relationship building there. And that was one style. And, it probably worked for some people. Mm-hmm. It made me think, I can see myself leaving here eventually. But some would argue, but that's reality, right? You seem to be saying that at least in the teaching profession, if you're not building relationships, if you're not taking that approach that we care about you as a person, that we care about the success of you as a teacher and as a person, and we care not just beyond the walls, not just within the walls of this building, if you're not doing that, you will lose people. Yeah?
I would go one step further. I'm sorry to hear about that experience that you had.
I'm fine. Don't worry about
me. That's a tough one right there. I'm not going to go the direction of pay raises and all those directions, because even across the city of Rochester, we've got such inequity in terms of pay, and even across our country. I've got just a very side note: 38-year educator, Oklahoma State Teacher of the Year, makes $48,000 down in Oklahoma. And I start thinking about what we make up here, and we make a substantially amount more money up here, but we're still, that's still a challenging point that we're at right now, is inequity in the way things are panned out. But that's kind of the world we're at. But that's a conversation for another day. I would go one step further, that it's not just the way leadership talks to teachers, it's the way teachers talk to each other, it's the way teachers talk to leadership, but also, most importantly, it's the way students talk to each other. I'll give you a great example. I teach grad school. This is another thing that I've done that I said, enough's enough. I've got to help the problem right here. Make it my service then to help the problem instead of complain about the problem. Literacy, we're facing a nationwide literacy crisis right now. The amount of whether it's technology or the amount that kids are talked to or even read to as early on as children has gone down, and it's affecting us in terms of literacy. And what's happened is, where it used to be where we learned to read kindergarten through fourth grade, and then once we hit fifth grade, we're starting to look at adolescence, and we're now reading to learn. What's happening is learning to read is now pushing into fifth, sixth, seventh grade. And as a reaction, we now have standards that we have to have literacy standards in content areas like social studies, science, mathematics, and the arts, everywhere, counseling, you name it, across the board in New York State, which is addressing the issue of poor literacy as we get to that adolescent level. So what did I do? I now teach at the College of Brockport about how we can infuse literacy into secondary education, because it's something that we are getting to become a lower literate society right now. We're not as literate as we used to be. I took a picture in an airport the other day, and it was funny. Not a single person had a book out. Every person had their cell phone out, and that's really not reading right there. That's just kind of like little snippets going
back
and forth.
That's so interesting, because a generation ago, even just one generation ago, half the people there would be reading
a book. Yeah. And doctor's office, same thing. Everywhere, waiting for the bus, people are reading a book. So we are seeing a severe decline in literacy. What are we going to do about it? Well, we're going to have to work on it together and address this. But it's also going to take, we talk about early childhood intervention programs, but that puts it on the school. So now we talked a little bit about what teachers need to do, what administrators need to do. But if you're a parent out there, or a grandparent, if you have a child in the house, there is a responsibility level of owning that too. So it's a shared community of learners right here, and that it's not just the school that has to take ownership of this learning. One of the things that has been done, not really successfully in our state, is early childhood intervention from 0 to like 4 years old. In fact, I studied a school called the primary school out in California. Mark Zuckerberg has financed that particular project out there. And I would argue in New York State that early childhood intervention has the greatest intentions possible. It's wonder, there's a lot of effort going there. And the idea is that in a child's mind, when you're growing, your greatest sponge moments for language are 0 to about 10 years old. And this is why, like, things like Sesame Street and shows like that were teaching bilingualism, and kids were picking it up really quick because of what was there, because that part, your brain's developing. I try to learn a foreign language right now. I'm approaching 50, and I can't pick it up because my brain is not, that's brain development there. So one of the things that we, in recognizing that, is education in New York over the past, I guess, 15 to 20 years to attack the literacy crisis has tried to go back and, you know, and go into the homes. But the trouble with that is if you are a single parent in poverty, raising kids, is your priority in the evening when you're exhausted and trying to put food on the table and still worried about bills to sit down and read to your kids? Or are you putting them in front of a television right there? And honestly, I can't blame them.
No, it's desperation.
It's desperation. You know, you're in survival mode. So this isn't to place any blame on homes right there, but we need to get to a point of doing literate things with children that are at a young age. So my solution to that would be, why aren't we, before the problem of I have two or three kids or I have a single kid in my house, why are we not changing at the secondary level in health and teaching 16, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds? Someday, God willing, you're going to be a parent, and that's a wonderful experience, but there's challenges that come with it. But teach them about brain development then. When the pressure's off and that kid that's screaming or crying or having to get dinner on the table is not necessarily happening, that they're actually thinking ahead of time, proactively, when I have that child, if I don't read to that kid, I'm going to be facing challenges in school because literacy rates go down if I don't do this. I would love to start seeing that happen in our schools. So the secondary approach right there, let's start teaching parents how to be parents instead of sending home the rubber screaming baby that wakes you up in the middle of the night that you have to take care of for 2 days. Or when I was in school, it was a sack of flour, I think, that you had to carry around with an egg on top and make sure the egg didn't get cracked. We need to start teaching people proactively prior to having children the importance of certain things in their lives. And perhaps for a few people, that will break that generational issue of illiteracy.
Talking to Christopher Albrecht, who is a teacher in Brockport, getting ready for going back to school next Thursday.
The kids come. We go in as teachers on Tuesday. I've been in my school for 2 weeks straight. I can hardly wait. I've got an empty classroom right now, and I would just call it a room. It becomes a classroom when those kids show up on Wednesday, and I can hardly wait.
On Wednesday.
Kids get ready, because I hope everybody that has not gone back yet, my gosh, have a great school year.
So as we get ready for our only break of the hour, in our second half hour with Christopher, here's what we're going to talk about, because we're not just talking about back to school. We're talking about the challenges facing the Rochester City School District. And if your thought is, well, he teaches in Brockport, well, he's the 2018 New York State Teacher of the Year who has been volunteering his time quietly for three different schools in Rochester, trying to help people on the ground, trying to listen, to understand individual problems in individual places, and to learn about how those problems manifest and what might work. And now he's speaking publicly for the first time about his views about how change may happen in Rochester. Amidst all of the rancor and the political infighting, here's the Teacher of the Year saying, I'll help. And he doesn't want to be political, and I understand that. But in our second half hour, we're going to talk about a few things. We're going to talk about why he thinks ignoring is the worst form of abuse. We're going to talk a little bit more about what high standards truly mean and how to apply them. We're going to talk about why he wants to put duct tape over naysayers' mouths and more. Right back with the 2018 New York State Teacher of the Year. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday is Labor Day, and from noon to 2, first of all, first hour, we air The Pulse, and we are going to be bringing you a Labor Day special celebrating the hardworking people who keep the engines of productivity humming. This special from The Pulse is going to explore how science and technology are changing work and workplaces. And then in our second hour, jobs and women at work. Happy Labor Day on Monday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So when you say ignoring is the worst form of abuse, when we talk about our school children, particularly in Rochester, what do you mean by that?
Well, if we're talking specifically about the students in Rochester, this is not just a Rochester thing. This is I think it's a little more concentrated in Rochester, but it's out in the suburbs too, and I'm seeing a great deal of it. What I mean by ignoring is the the worst form of abuse is this. If we're taking a child and not talking to them, you think, how do you learn to read, or how do you learn to write, or even how do you learn to speak? You learn to listen. Well, if no one's talking to you, then there's not any development of language right there. So if we're talking strictly academics in that sense, and we're going to take a different approach on this in a second, but if we ignore our children and we don't talk to our children, and there's plenty of distractions out there right now that are causing this, then we are doing them a tremendous disservice. One of the things that we need to be teaching in our schools, and I've noticed an increase over the years, the methods that I've had to teach in Brockport and likewise in so many discussions in the city, is no longer the teacher can be the sole voice in the classroom. There needs to be a lot more collaboration, a lot more work done on how to talk to each other. I had an interesting discussion last night in our grad class. There's a method, teachers would know this word, and probably most people can figure out what it means, think, pair, share. So you think about something that the teacher says, then you turn to your neighbor, and you share with your neighbor, then we share out as a class. But what if you're the middle person in between two people? What happens? You think about, okay, which person am I going to turn to, right? Okay, so now there's a social issue in communication. I turn to that person, the two people on the outside, one person's thinking, oh my gosh, what do I do if they don't turn to me? So what we do is we need to just simply shift it a little bit, because people nowadays, I've noticed with children, even with adults, that they get scared when they have to advocate for themselves and say, hey, I need a partner. What we need to do is become more welcoming. So the change in approach would be, okay, I want you to turn to a neighbor, but before you turn to that neighbor, after you have that partner, look around, and if anyone doesn't have a partner, invite them into your group. That's a socially acceptable thing, and it reduces anxiety. So ignoring people, it's so easy to turn to your neighbor and just not talk to that person next to them. So if we're going to teach children, we can have to teach them not to ignore their neighbors. But likewise, in homes, right now, you know, I try to leave my cell phone in the car, because that thing is, you know, for even somebody that's very aware, being me, of the addiction of technology and the addiction of instant, you know, things. You feel that phone vibrate in your pocket and you wonder, well, who is that? And that's natural curiosity right there. But it takes your mind off of the moment. Raising children in home, and in teaching children in a classroom, if we're distracted, we can't be distracted. The children need you present in the moment, and we cannot have that distraction there. The ramifications that I'm seeing is this, and this is really beginning to, this is probably my number one concern moving forward in my career and looking at public education and even charter school education, private education. I think we see it in all areas, is that when a child's ignored, especially at home, we see reductions in empathy, we see reductions in remorse, and we see increases in violence issues. We see children that are more or less willing to communicate, and I worry about that. You know, if we're going to talk about making our schools safer environments, and making our schools places where there's joy of learning, which is our goal. Everybody wants that. We have to communicate with our kids more. You have to take the time to talk to them. If you're making dinner and you're just sticking your kid in front of the television to get them out of your hair, I would encourage you, please. I know it's tough. I know it's hard to work a full day, but bring them into that kitchen with you. Make dinner with them. Take time to ask them what their day was like. I know it's hard, parents. Some of you are working two jobs out there just to make ends meet. But if we don't do that, that child that you have in your house right there, you're putting them at risk. Do something for them. Your number one priority, even though that paycheck feels like it's so important, please, please, please talk to those kids. And teachers, allow time in your classroom for those students to talk to each other and communicate with each other, and teach them the proper way to listen to each other as well.
Let me grab a phone call. This is Carlene in Rochester on with Christopher Albrecht. Go ahead, Carlene.
Yes, I caught the middle of a program on dyslexia yesterday, so I can't give you the credentials of the educator that was presenting it, but it was definitely a professional. And they had issues with dyslexia in their own family, so they did some more. They did some research. They saw that their child got extra attention for the problem, but then they started testing. They wondered how prevalent it was, and it turned out that in preschool children, it was 1 in 5 children, which was unbelievable. And then they also tested in prison, and they found that 50% of the people who were in prison were dyslexic. What does that tell us? Teaching reading is more than just plain teaching reading. And you as an educator, how would you address this problem if indeed dyslexia is such a common issue?
Okay.
Carlene, it's nice to talk with you. Thanks for calling in. And that's a very, very valid question and great insight by you. I would argue this. We have something called individualized education plans, and those are for students that are identified as students with disabilities. And I'm using the terminology that the state of New York uses. I'm not as crazy about saying the word disabled. I just don't like it. But the if you're talking about something like dyslexia, that is a disability of some sorts. And I would say this, Carlene, I'll address the dyslexia in just a second, but I would say that every single one of us, every single child in every single classroom in every single place deserves an IEP. And what I mean by that is this: every student has a weakness. Every student has strength. Our job as teachers, parents, administrators, communities, custodians, paraprofessionals is to identify what the strengths of those children are, make them feel good about that, and help them believe in themselves so we can tackle the difficulties. Now, in regards to learning disabilities, you're right. I spent some time down at Groveland Prison. I did an internship down at Groveland, and a lot of those people there had two separate things that were putting them in the prison system. One was challenges, the commonality challenges in school and not finishing high school. The other one was about 85% involved drug addiction or drug use or drug dealing. So my response to that was the state's response to it under Governor Pataki, if we want to go back in history, a policy was put in: if you go into prison, you have to get a GED or high school equivalency diploma while you're in prison. So if you don't have a high school diploma and go to prison, you are going to be going to school. The tough part is a lot of those people that are going into prison are still coming down off their highs and are not testing correctly. So to get them in the proper place in those prison schools is a very difficult thing, to get them accurately assessed. In terms of dyslexia, well, you know, Carlene, I've got kids in fourth grade that get their B's and D's backwards and different things like that. I don't know if I would say 1 in 5. I've never seen research that says 1 in 5 students are dyslexic. But if they need that help right there, yes, that the sooner that can be identified, the better. And there's a lot of kids where there's different degrees of dyslexia too, where you might have a slight problem of one thing and a slight problem of another thing, and the combination of those two present itself like something totally else. So it's, yeah, I would, you know, educators have to be very, very conscious of being aware of their students and every single one of them. We can't just teach a class. We have to teach, if I have 25 students in that room, I have to teach 25 individuals and be aware of each one of their needs and each one of their strengths.
And what I have read, and what tracks just to logic, is that districts with higher levels of poverty, a district like this that has had issues with lead and other issues over the years, have just higher rates of students with what we might call individual disabilities or learning challenges. So even just if you take dyslexia, you know, we know that people who struggle in life are more likely. According to Mother Jones, had a study where they talked to Dr. Catherine Currier Moody, who found that 48% of incarcerated people in her study out of Texas had dyslexia. I mean, that's a remarkable amount of people who end up struggling in life. So I think in Rochester, how difficult that must be, and the strain and stress for teachers, and the challenge of teaching individually.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if we want to, I mean, now we're starting to spiderweb out into different departments right now. Does this affect the Rochester Police Department? Heck yeah, because if we want to reduce the amount of crime in our town right now, education is the key. Education is the key to all of these challenges right here. But we need, educators and families. I'm not going to put it on teachers. I'm not going to put it on administrators. And I'm not going to put it on the community. I'm not going to put it on the mayor. I'm going to put it on all of us. That we all need to be invested in this if this is going to be successful. This is not, the schools are failing. And that's the thing that I really struggled with Mrs. Warren's comments right there, where, you know, our schools are not doing right by our kids. Our school board is not doing right by our kids. Well, that school board was elected right there. Let's remind ourselves of that. And the fact is, this is a community issue. And we are all part of that community right now. Every single person has to be aware of that. Yes, incarceration, lack of education, and people that are incarcerated, that's been identified for a very long time. And obviously under Mr. Pataki's legislation, the fact that we have to educate those, there's schools. You go to Groveland, there's schools right in there. There's a principal and teachers and everything where they're learning skills to get to the point of being educated. Because if you come out of prison and you're educated, you have a better chance of not going back to that same place.
Valerie writes to say, when I'm shopping, if I see a parent actually talking to the child in their cart instead of schmoozing on their phone, I tell them I'm now bestowing the Mother or Father of the Year award to you. That's how rare it is, Valerie
says. Yeah, that's true. So then, okay, Valerie, you know what? You're 100% correct. Let's do that. And so parents, it's up to you. You have a choice. It's not against the law to be on your cell phone in a shopping place. You have a kid in that car, it's not against the law to talk to your kid either. You have a choice to make right there. You make that choice, but it's a moral decision right there. And if you really want to put your child in a better place, it might be something contradictory to what you want personally, what you want selfishly inside. I know those cell phones are addicting, but you know what? That kid in front of you is a human being. And if we're going to get back to being a great society again, it starts with personal communication and personal contact, especially with our children.
Andrew in Irondequoit is next on the phone. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much for all the work that you're doing. Every time you're on the show, I'm very impressed. So thank you for that. But I'm curious if you had any kind of feedback or suggestions for someone who's not an educator and doesn't have children in the city school district, how, you know, community members could get more involved or support. You know, I've done Big Brothers Big Sisters program. I go in sometimes to teach with Junior Achievement, but quite honestly, never feels like enough. And so I'm just wondering. I'm also the president of Rochester Young Professionals, so I'd love to figure out a way for us as an organization to get more involved in kind of the future of our community, especially given, as you were talking about, how the parents often have so many other competing challenges and multiple jobs and other things on their plate.
Andrew, thank you. That is an important question, because the whole premise of why Christopher's here, if you're just joining us late, he's the 2018 New York State Teacher of the Year, and he doesn't teach in Rochester. He teaches in Brockport. But he says we all have to care deeply about the city school district, its success, and the impact for the children. Andrew's an Irondequoit. He's not a parent. He's not an educator. But he's saying, what can I do?
Well, Andrew, what you've already done is you grabbed my heart a little bit right there, because it sounds like you're already doing a lot. So thank you very much for doing that, especially for our children. Anybody can volunteer in the schools, but volunteering is not necessarily volunteering is a good thing. How am I going to communicate this to you? The most important thing is transparency. I would say that everybody in our community, if you don't have, like Andrew, you admitted to not having a child in the school. And what you should know right now, though, Andrew, is your entitlement as a citizen in your community. And I think you said Irondequoit. You should know what's happening in Irondequoit schools. You should have an awareness of what's being taught there. And then if you see a connection, hopefully feel empowered enough to go in and say, I'd like to be part of that. Anybody that does not have children in school, you can volunteer in schools. There's a process that usually it has to be approved through a school board. There's a whole background process, just like I go through to be employed, to make sure the safety of the children is there. But approach your district offices and say, how can I be involved? I have had adults. In fact, thank goodness, we wouldn't have a chess club out in Brockport if it wasn't for a guy named Frank that I rely on as a chess expert that works with kids, and he does not have any children in our school district. So if you're somebody saying, I want to be involved, I want to be part of it, approach the district office. It's not, you don't show up at this school and suddenly are allowed in, because we're dealing in a world of, you know, increased safety and increased thoughts like that. But there are opportunities in every school district to become a volunteer and to become a productive member of that. And my gosh, as a teacher, when I have 5 or 6 adults in the classroom and I can break up my classroom of 25 kids into 5 or 6 groups and have a trusted adult with each one of those groups, those kids are now getting like a 3-4 to 1 advantage of being able to talk and communicate, and it's so much more effective.
Andrew, thank you for that phone call. You mentioned before the program began that on your short list of things that you think needs to be addressed in the Rochester City School District, you joked that you'd like to put duct tape over the naysayer's mouth. Yeah. I don't think you're the type to actually physically do it. That's probably a metaphor. But let's talk about naysayers and how you think it impacts what's going on in Rochester.
I'll clarify that as a metaphor right now. I've never put duct tape over anybody's mouth. But I don't want to cause a rift between Mrs. Warren and myself by this conversation, but Mrs. Warren, we need to look for the positive in people. And when I know the system feels broken right now, if you look at the data, especially the academic data, it's not strong. You know, I was listening to Mrs. Elia, who's our current commissioner for one more month, saying, you know, big improvement in East High School. We're up to 65% graduation. And, you know, that's great, you know, that there's improvement. But 65%, that means there's 35% that are not graduating right now. And I want to know what's going to happen to those 35%. I care about those 35%. Those 35% are human beings on this earth. Their humanness is so different than my humanness. And I want to see them have successful lives, too. So even though we're seeing increases, by being a naysayer, I think the more we say something negative and we can continue to say things negative, it makes us believe that we live in a negative world. We see it a tremendous amount. We've seen an increase in this in politics, and it's not the first time in history. I mean, we could go all the way back. You want to go back to the second election of the President of the United States, Thomas Jefferson versus John Adams. I mean, one of the ugliest races in the history of man right there, if you want to go back in time. It's happened before where politicians are go naysayer. And I understand why people are saying negative things because of the data, but it's not helping the cause. That is why I have chosen not to speak out and actually get myself into some of those schools to do something about it and do something positive. Anybody that wants to be a naysayer, try this first. Roll up your sleeves, volunteer, get in that school, and give what you're talented in to help our schools become great. Let's do it together.
Everyone can do something?
Everybody can do something. Everybody in this world, it's my personal belief, so this is just me saying it, but everybody has a talent and everybody has a challenge they're working on. And you're fooling yourself if you don't have that. Everybody does.
In our last few minutes, you did put the issue of high standards on your list. Mm. And I want you to kind of articulate why standards are on your mind right now as we think about the Rochester City School District.
All right. So we're talking about different types of when I wrote that, I was thinking more about graduation rates and what a graduation diploma means. There's local diplomas and there's also Regents diplomas. I know there's been a lot said right now, is the Regents program outdated at this point? I would encourage listeners, if you're really passionate about what we're talking about right now, or you're getting more curious, go online to the New York State Education Department, nysed.edu, and look up what a 2019 Regents test actually looks like in mathematics, science, social studies. And what you're going to notice is there are a bunch of words on that page which involve a lot of reading. If you can't read, you're not going to pass a math Regents. So I would say by upping our standards right now, we can't just say kids are, well, this kid's proficient in math, he can do this and this and compute. They've got to be able to apply it across disciplines. So upping our standards means not coming down because we're saying, wow, this is an impossible journey. It's not an impossible journey. It's a long journey. It's a journey worth fighting for, but it's not an impossible journey. Rochester, I see, is one of the greatest untapped cities in America right now. I really believe that after going into the schools. There are teachers and there's administrators that truly want to do right. And I honestly think that the mayor also is the same way. She wants to see our city succeed, but we can't do it by being negative. We have to do it by getting our sleeves rolled up and getting into that school and getting with our kids. And that includes parents as well in the community as well. If you don't have kids, you've got to own it too. I mean, it's our town. It's our city. We're Rochesterians. This is very, very important that we all come together on this.
About 30 seconds left, and you're excited to go back to school.
My gosh, yes.
What message do you want to leave with the listeners as everyone, all the kids in our region go back to school?
Oh, my. School is a place of joy, and school is a place of happiness. Go in there and know that, you know, the people that are there for you, kids. This is a message, my message to children. Children, those schools were built for you. Those adults are there for you. You go in school and you take advantage of that as much as you can and learn as much as you can and enjoy learning.
I'm really grateful that you spent some time on your final. Well, we all know teachers don't do anything over the summer, right? It's all vacation for you, right?
It was a great vacation.
Yeah,
you know what?
Yeah, no, yeah. You're working all the time. You are, and I know teachers are. And to all the teachers getting ready to go back, especially if you've had time to listen to Connections this summer, we love you and we're really grateful for the work that you're doing. And thank you for the work you're doing. And Christopher Albrecht, going back to teach fourth grade at Brockport, but helping out in the Rochester City School District. Great ideas for all of us as we think about helping this district. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on, Evan.
Thanks to Emma Ray, the great work that you're doing behind the glass with us. And Dolores, so great to see you every Friday. I lost the sound of Rob. Everything's gone. I don't know if I can. Can you still hear me? My headphones are dead. Megan Mack, Evan Dawson, have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday.